Welcome to Fanboy News Network, your guide to geek culture. I'm Jeff Harris.
And I'm Dan Christensen.
So we're starting this week out with a correction of sorts.
Yeah, well, it's those three little words that every married man loves to hear. You were right, Jeff.
Yay!
Last time, I accidentally conflated Nick Holt, the guy who was Nux in Mad Max and the Beast in X-Men, with Ben Whishaw, who plays Q in the rebooted James Bond series. So, sorry about that. Thank you, IMDb.
So, for this week, all right, last episode, we had the joy of being the first time since you've come on as co-host that we did not have to talk about convention staffs behaving badly.
This is one of those, that it has been one episode since last time a con messed up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Unfortunately, now we have to reset the counter because there was a lot of things going on since our last episode that...
Can I go pop popcorn for this? This is going to be good.
Well, you didn't go down, did you?
To...
Galacticon?
Nope.
All right. The big thing that happened is we just had Galacticon 4 happen in Seattle. Now, Galacticon is kind of a traveling show in that I think it's organized out of Texas, or I think the organizers were from Texas, but it actually goes to a different city each year. And this year it was at the convention center at Seattle Center. Now, last year's, I guess, some issues had happened. People weren't happy, and this was supposed to be the year that everything got better.
that sounds like a great theory. And however,
that is definitely not what happened. So the big thing, Galacticon, as its name obviously hints to, is a very Battlestar Galactica centric show. So they had guests from both iterations of Battlestar Galactica. The big name draws were the reboot.
True. The big name draw for me, because I was actually considering going, the big name draw for me was also Ron Glass, the guy who was Shepherd Book and the Doctor in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. He never goes to conventions, and he was slated to come. That was almost got me through the door.
You know, no one ever remembers Barney Miller anymore.
I do. Detective Harris was an inspiration for me. But
what happened now? So let's see. I know that amongst the guests were Edward James Olmos, who was clearly going to be the big draw.
Of course.
But I can't believe I'm forgetting her name. Who the president?
Yes.
Yeah. Wow. We're both blanking her name right now. And that's, I feel like a bad geek.
Does it count if I remember that she was in sneakers?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure, but she was there, Michael Hogan, Colonel Ty, and Grace Park, I know for sure, Boomer, as well as Kono from Hawaii Five-O. So they were on the guest list, as well as Richard Hatch, who is the one actor that spans both series. Aaron Douglas was on the list.
They had a huge list on paper, on ones and zeros on their website. They had a huge list. However, what was it? Tuesday? Wednesday?
Tuesday or Wednesday, yeah.
The whole thing fell apart. Claudia Christian was another one.
Babylon 5.
Babylon 5. So on Tuesday or Wednesday, right before the con was supposed to start, they completely scrubbed their guest list. They completely changed everything.
Yeah, they announced that they were... releasing essentially the new Battlestar Galactica guests, all of them. And I think, was Ron Glass released or did he just choose not to come?
I don't know. He was no longer on the website as of Wednesday. So.
And this was like last minute. They just said, okay, all the really big name guests, due to financial issues, won't be coming.
And, oh, by the way, all those prepaid photo ops that you purchased, yeah, you don't get your money back.
Well, there's an update on that.
Oh, there is.
There's an update on that. We'll cover that in a few minutes.
Sorry.
So what ended up happening, all of them got disinvited, including Richard Hatch, although within a day they reversed that and decided to still bring Richard Hatch. They were also going to be having a Lost in Space reunion with the four surviving main cast members of Lost in Space attending, but with everything that happened, Billy Mumy and Angela Cartwright pulled out of the convention. They opted not to go because they felt it was going to be a train wreck. Claudia Christensen was still on the invite list, and
Christian.
I always do that. Well, it's because you're here.
And, yeah, well, yeah. Blame me. It's okay.
Yeah, she was there, and I guess went out of her way to try and interact with as many people as possible. All of my vendor friends were got able to get great pictures with her. And I'm trying to think who else. They still had the old series guests, but they were like minor characters. None of the major stars from the old series outside of Richard Hatch were there. And I think the woman who plays Chani from Farscape was still on the guest list. I can't remember her name right now. And obviously we're not going online to look up at this time, but the upshot was all of a sudden everyone's like, what's going on?
Yeah. All the reasons why you were coming here are gone.
So, what ended up happening, I guess the chairman resigned right before the convention and everyone was like, well, what about refunds? Because a VIP ticket was $600. And the whole point of having the VIP ticket was for interacting with the big stars. And then you have the vendors who have paid money to have vendor space. All of a sudden, well, are we going to be able to make our money back? Everyone's going, what's going on? What's going on? So
what did go on?
Well, one last thing prior to the convention.
Oh.
And I think day passes were originally about $30.
That sounds about right.
But right before the convention started, a Groupon was announced to get in for $15. And so what ended up happening is, first off, the convention center was a ghost town. There was no signage around Seattle Center that there was a convention going on.
Oh, how sweet.
The only advertisement that had apparently gone on at all for the convention was online. And so the only signage you could see anywhere around the convention hall were clearly really quick printed off of Word document signs going Galacticon this way. One of my friends who is a regular convention vendor reported her worst first day sales ever.
Oy.
Now, by the end of the convention, she did report she was able to at least make her money back. So she didn't make money, which for her meant money was tight, but at least she didn't lose money on the deal. I don't know about the other vendors. I haven't heard back from anyone else yet. But it was clearly a ghost town.
Yeah.
Around the convention. There was also the person who was now running the convention.
Chairman pro tempore.
Essentially. I guess had to be rushed to the hospital. Something happened. They're saying that originally there was, of course, all these reports. Oh, he had a heart attack. Oh, he had a stroke. Apparently, he just hadn't been eating. He'd been trying to run things and had neglected self-care.
Let's just pause to remind our faithful listeners that of the important rule for attending cons, any con, no matter if it's a festival, a convention, whatever, it is the 5-2-1 rule. For every day that you are at the con, you should get 5 hours of sleep in a row. You should have 2 meals and you should take 1 shower for every single day you're at a con. Doesn't matter if you're an attendee. Doesn't matter if you're one of the people running the thing. 5-2-1. Live it. Love it.
So, yeah. So that was going on. And yeah, let's see. Aaron Douglas had been disinvited, but he ended up showing up in Seattle anyway and organizing a pub crawl. and they took a lot of selfies from the pub crawl, flipping off the convention.
How about that?
So he was really not happy. No one was there. And then the last day of the convention, and this had actually been predicted 2 days before the convention, a friend of mine who works on the organizing committee of a lot of conventions in the area predicted that on Sunday they would open up the convention hall for free to allow people in so that they could make their minimum guarantee of autograph signings for the guests who were there. Also to give a better shot to people who were vending. Now, one thing they did do is people who bought day passes that morning were told they could go back to registration and get a refund of those day passes.
Okay, that's nice. But what about the whole...
I was checking today before Daniel came over to record. They have started announcing they are issuing refunds. So the VIP passes, they are being issued a refund minus the $75 that a regular weekend pass would be.
Good.
So they're getting the $520. So they're getting the VIP portion refunded. The other big brouhaha was that a lot of people had prepaid for photo ops and had paid for those ops with stars who were no longer attending the show. It has been announced those are also being refunded.
Good.
So yeah, refunds apparently are now happening. I think part of that is, you know, issuing refunds lowers the chance of litigation.
I have to say, this is rapidly becoming the cons behaving badly report. And I started thinking about this litany because we have, you know, AkiCon. No matter how good of a DJ he is, don't hire the pedophile. DashCon, an hour in the ball pit doesn't count for anything. This one, you can either have prepaid photo ops or you can change your entire guest list 3 days before the con, but you can't have both.
A lot of people are comparing this to DashCon. In fact, there's a picture that was going around Facebook that had photo opt Michael Hogan into the DashCon ball pit. So yeah, there's a lot of comparisons there. And yeah, I think part of the problem is that it's a traveling show. Those are kind of rough in the first place. And I'm trying to think of a traveling for-profit convention that I don't consider dicey. And none are really coming to mind. I have always had problems with those. And the problem is if you're creating a bad rep in somebody else's backyard, it can have a negative effect on the conventions that are homegrown. Let's face it, the type of convention that GalacticCon was is very similar to the nature of AngloCon, which just had, had gone on hiatus for several years. And this last year, they just brought back very successfully. But part of that was they didn't aim for the highest level of guests in their first year back. They kept expectations moderate and were able to hit them. But again, it was local organizers, and a lot of the organizers were people who worked on NorwestCon, who were very experienced convention organizers. And, you know, they didn't bring any of the new series stars. So that helped keep it in a reasonable budget. And they brought the Sixth Doctor, Ace, and Joe from the Third Doctor era as their main guests, and had, from every report, a very successful show.
Good. I guess the thing that's what you're talking about, the traveling shows poisoning the well. But in general, though, I've noticed just a remarkable takeoff in the number of people saying, hey, we can do a con. We can do it in the barn. And it's part of it is the idea that I suppose geek culture and pop culture is a moneymaker. People, geeks have money. And everyone trying to throw together a con just makes it seems like you're killing the golden goose.
Well, they see the dollar signs. They hear the stories about how much money these rake in. And they forget that the money is raked in because things are well organized, and that if things fall apart, you're conventions make their money on repeat business.
Yep.
You get the first year is going to be small, and you need to build your rep if you really want to start getting something that is going to have sustainability, is going to have a built-in audience. I mean, I remember when Emerald City Comic Con started, and it was using the exact same convention center that Galacticon used this weekend.
Yep.
And it was this little affair, and the thing is that they brought in a guy at the top who was a smart manager. And it had gone on actually a few years prior to that with some other people where if it had been those other people, it would still be a small little affair at Seattle Center. But they brought in somebody who had some good ideas on how to run things, and it has now become one of the premier conventions in the industry, and it's one of the ones where the news agencies, oh, Emerald City is starting. We got to get the news crews there because great stuff's going to come out of it. But that took years of effort.
Yeah. And when I am reminded of something that our mentor once taught us as far as the repeat business is concerned. Pete always used to tell the story about a friend of his in business saying, I am a sheep. You can fleece me occasionally, but you can only butcher me once.
Yeah.
That's the same thing here.
And I think that's a good analogy. It's, you know, come in, you know, don't kill the goose, you know, just pluck a few feathers.
Exactly.
So the other big nonsense that happened at the exact same time as Galacticon was Gen Con. And overall, Gen Con was not nonsense. Gen Con is a big gaming convention. It used to be one of the big conventions.
It was originally the gaming convention.
Well, it really was. Well, Gen Con was the convention that was started by TSR.
Right.
It's named Gen Con because TSR's offices were on Lake Geneva.
Okay.
And I went to it when I worked for Wizards of the Coast. It was at that time held in the Milwaukee Convention Center. And it got bought by Wizards of the Coast when they bought TSR. And when Hasbro bought Wizards of the Coast, they allowed Pete Atkinson, who was the head of WotC at the time, to keep ownership of Gen Con. So it is now an independent convention. In fact, the woman who runs Gen Con, Adrienne Swartout, was somebody I worked with at WotC. And it doesn't surprise me in the least that she's now running the convention. So it's really well respected. Now, it has, of course, been eclipsed by PAX in a lot of ways.
However, for better or for worse.
For better or for worse. However, PAX is a pan-gaming convention in that it does include tabletop, but it's also very video game-focused. Gen Con is still purely a tabletop-based convention. But it is pretty big. I mean, when I first went to Gen Con, it was the biggest convention I went to. And at the time I worked for WotC, the only convention I ever went to that was bigger than Gen Con was San Diego Comic-Con. So it's a huge show. And being a big show, it does get a lot of crossover media appeal, including comic books. And there was an announcement of several comic book-based panels, including a panel about women in comics.
Don't tell me they did the Denver thing.
They did the Denver thing initially.
Damn it.
Which was they had a women's in comic panel that featured no women. Now, here's the interesting thing. People called them on that.
Good.
And what the convention said was, well, we invited a lot of female comic creators to attend the convention and everyone passed.
Really?
So we wanted to hold this women in comics panel, but we had no women in comics to be there. So, you know, the ended up being a women in comics panel with all men. Once that story broke, some female creators did come on board.
Good.
So suddenly you do have women in comics having women in comics. However,
oh no,
they kept the same moderator from before, who is a guy, Bill Willingham.
Okay.
Now, Bill is known primarily as the writer and creator of Fables, which was a huge Vertigo book.
Yeah, I remember you talking about it.
Based on fairy tales. Unfortunately, it went on a little too long.
Because that never happens.
Yes, yeah, it's one of those cases of, you know, I have always touted that the best comic book series end. You know, witness Sandman, Transmetropolitan, Watchmen, you know, most of the really celebrated comic series are written with a goal in mind and then end. And the problem was Fables kind of hit a natural end point and then just kept going. But this is not a discussion of the Fable series, although we could do that. Although it did recently just end.
Well then.
At issue, I don't know.
3 million and something.
150, and it probably should have ended at about 75, is the theory. The point is, Bill was the moderator of the panel, and it has been described as a master course in mansplaining.
Oh, no!
Apparently, you know, Bill started off with a complaint that, you know, the nature of the panel didn't really require women to be on the panel. And whenever, and he apparently throughout the panel was anytime, one of the women would start talking, he'd interrupt them. When female attendees got up to ask questions, he'd interrupt them.
Classy, dude.
Yeah, it turned out to be a really bad scene. And of course, there's been fallout. He's been trying to defend himself since, but it's...
But wait, I can explain. You took me out of context. What are the other normal...
Yeah, it's one of those, you know, it started out looking really bad. Then Gen Con looked like they were going to turn around and make it work. And then Bill Willingham decided, nope, we're still taking it down the rabbit hole.
That's okay, Bill. There's always room in Gamergate for you.
Well, a lot of comparisons to that. It was pretty bad. And yes, that is my cat whining in the background.
Oh, well.
Probably hear him a lot today. So that was... Now, one other thing happened at Gen Con that I think bears some mention. They have an award they give out every year called the Ennies. And I forget what they're named after. But it's the gaming award. And what they do is they have categories. And then in the categories, they award two prizes, a gold and a silver.
Okay.
And this year, Dungeons and Dragons, in every category it was nominated, it won. One of the, either a gold or a silver.
Refresh my memory. Which version of D&D are we talking about?
Whatever the current one is.
What? 7.0, 8.0? It's like Windows. They come out with a new version every couple of years.
True. So, but one of the other books nominated was a book called A Red and Pleasant Land. And it was written by a man named Zach Smith.
Okay.
And Zach is considered a polarizing figure in the game industry. Red and Pleasant Land was nominated in four categories. And it won either gold or silver in each of its nominated categories. So apparently people really liked it. But because Smith is such a polarizing figure in the industry, a bunch of people got up and walked out in protest.
Of course.
Now, just real quick to understand Zach, he's, and it's hard to tell, I consider it literally there's two sides to every story in his case. Some people try to say, oh, he's like Gamergate, which seems really weird because what he was originally known for is being the GM of a web series called I Hit It With My Axe, which he GMs for a group of adult actresses.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And that's because his girlfriend is in the adult industry. And so it was all her friends and they all wanted to game. There's a lot of suicide girls involved. There's a lot of adult performers in his gaming group. A lot of who are adult performers, but are also feminist. So it makes the whole Gamergate comparison seem kind of odd. But then again, he gets complaints about objectifying women because of the, you know, a lot of his non-game related stuff is also, in the adult field.
He's soaking in it, Madge.
So you get that. And because he's such a polarizing figure, a lot of people just he's one of those guys that unfortunately generates a lot of emotion. On the other hand, I think it's, if you're going to have an award that is voted on, it's like the Hugos in that the consumer base, the fan base, get to vote on the award. So that means while some people don't like them, other people clearly do. And that leads to, you know, it's one of those weird things. It's like, it's notable because something odd happened. I don't have a lot of feelings either way. I'm aware of Zach Smith. I know the work he does, but I've never actually watched an episode of I Hit It With My Axe. And I'm not currently playing D&D or having a lot to do with it, so I didn't pick up his book.
I think one of the things that it boils, just from an outsider perspective, as much of an outsider as I can be in this, this is kind of one of those things about democracy. If voting is open and the award goes to the person who gets the most votes, it's kind of important to get the vote out. It's important to get out and make your voice be heard, because one person, one way or the other, not so much. But people voting and people, a lot of people getting out, being educated, making their choice be heard, you can make a difference. It's the, it will be the same thing come 16 months from now when we're in the election cycle. Getting the vote out means getting your voice heard. And if you don't like the way the vote looks to be going, vote. You know, make yourself be heard.
Well, so this is something we'll be discussing, probably not next episode, but the episode after, because we've got Worldcon coming up. And obviously the contention that has grown around the Hugos.
With the sad puppies and the rabid puppies.
Now, the voting has happened. I mean, yes. The voting date was due. All the votes are in. So whatever's going to happen is going to happen. Clearly, once that happens, we'll be talking about it.
I'm sure we'll be hearing about it as soon as it happens. There'll be this wailing and gnashing of teeth from Eastern Washington.
So that's the convention news that's been going on. Now, you said you just finally finished Daredevil.
I just finally finished Daredevil. I enjoyed it very much. I pushed through some of the violence. It was on the edge as far as a little too violent for me. The final showdown in the final episode was. It wasn't as bad and as bloody as some of the earlier pieces, but it was rough. But I definitely enjoyed the show. I definitely got a lot out of it. I finally found the Stan Lee cameo. He is an officer, a patrolman of the year, or officer of the year on a picture behind the booking agent's desk. That was fun. The other thing that I finished just recently, and this you can laugh,
okay.
But I went back in time and read Mark Millar's Red Son.
Oh, okay.
The old Superman series where Clark Kent's space pod crashes either 12 hours early or 12 hours later and lands in Soviet Russia as opposed to America, and grows up believing in the state and the power of the people as opposed to truth, justice, and the American way. Fascinating read.
Probably one of the best things Millar put out. Also, see, this is a good sign. Millar works best with an editor. You know, when he's got restraint.
And most writers write better with an editor.
Yeah, and DC definitely would only let him go so far with Red Son. Although I still, you know, he did explore some great themes. And, you know, the Red Son Superman is a popular cosplay.
Really?
Yeah, it is. Well, because it's an interesting variant on the costume. So, yeah, it's good. I mean, that's a great book. Again, be careful reading other of Millar's work, because he is definitely one of the most problematic writers out there right now. Avoid Nemesis at all costs. How about that?
This one was specifically smacked upside my head and recommended to me. At this point, the only other things I've got going on are Fight Club 2 and the last of the Mad Max.
I was reading an article that was, it was from Cracked, but it was about cases where there were adaptions of people's work that the author felt improved what they had written. and Fight Club falls under that category.
I wouldn't doubt it. Having read the book and having seen the movie, both are incredible. The movie does an incredible job of doing justice to the book.
Well, Chuck feels that he just likes how much more cohesive they end the story than he did. And yeah, he was like, is it as realistic as what I did? No, but is it more emotionally satisfying? Absolutely. That was his opinion. So I just read that the other day that he really liked the adaptation. And you hear about authors that hate how their work was adapted.
See Alan Moore.
Yeah. And for him, he was like, nope, I am very happy. I feel very satisfied that my work led to that movie. So speaking of movies.
Okay.
So let us turn our attention to the world of superhero films for a minute.
Which one? There are so many.
Well, before we get into the most obvious story, but leading into it, Ant-Man has turned out to be a surprising success. Moderate success, for sure. It is not doing the numbers of other Marvel movies.
Well, what can, really? I mean, I'm sorry. The judging it by the success of the Avengers or Ultron or things like that is setting everybody up to fail. Yeah. It does a remarkable number of zeros in its business.
Yeah, and it made its money.
Yeah,
Marvel did. I think if you look at it, did the studio lose money on the deal? No, they made money. They've got a fun movie. It'll probably do well on DVD sales. It helps add to the mythology of their shared universe. So Ant-Man is not the Marvel misstep. And that's, people are saying,
we saved that for Fantastic Four,
which is where we're leading to. And yeah, and that's it. It's so this weekend we had the release of the Fantastic Four movie. So let's walk on the journey that occurred to the Fantastic Four movie. Have you seen the movie Chronicle?
Doesn't even ring a bell.
Okay.
Sorry.
So, Josh Trank is the director of Fantastic Four. Okay. And his debut film was a movie called Chronicle. Now, Chronicle is one I've actually written about. I reviewed it when it came out, and I had actually talked about it in an earlier article I'd written. I wrote an article for Fanboy News Network a long time ago called I Can't Believe It's Not Superman. And the premise of the piece was how when you have non-adaption superhero movies, in other words, it's an original superhero creation for the cinema, the hero's powers invariably are some Superman knockoff.
Well, Superman does everything. Everything is going to be a Superman knockoff.
Well, I was very careful in my premise, specifically flight, super strength, and vulnerability.
Okay.
From that, you get Hancock, you get Greatest American Hero, you get some comics. The point was, one of the things I liked about Chronicle was the superpowers were not Superman knockoffs. What Chronicle was a found footage film about three high school students who encounter a mysterious object in the woods, and after the encounter, start developing telekinetic powers.
This is the one with where the final thing is videotaped by the guy?
Yeah.
Okay.
And one of the reasons I liked it was the only found footage film, or the first found footage film, I should say, where why everything was being filmed made sense. One of the characters was somebody who was dealing with being abused, and part of his coping mechanism was videotaping things. And the movie does display that his videotaping has become an obsession. Also, because the superpowers in the movie are telekinesis, they start having shots where all the characters are in the frame because he's just levitating the camera.
Right.
So you start getting that going on. It was a decent found footage film, in my opinion. I enjoyed it. I also felt it was interesting because I described it as a superhero movie, but not from the point of view of the hero. I described it in my article where I reviewed it as, imagine you're watching a Spider-Man film and your point of view character is Harry Osborn, which became interesting because that point of view character ended up playing Harry Osborn in Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Nice.
Just pure happenstance. So it was a dark film, as found footage films often are. But it was well done, although I will point out that Jennifer Lovely of Don't Read the Latin does not like it. And it, because she doesn't like the idea that, you know, abused kid plus superpowers invariably leads to supervillain.
True. I can respect that.
So, yeah. But this takes us now onto our winding road that leads us to Fantastic Four. Now, this is the third attempt to make a Fantastic Four movie.
Does that include the one that was, like, buried and completely forgotten about?
Yes, it does, because the first one was directed by Roger Corman and was done as a means to retain the rights to Fantastic Four. So it was made for $1 million in 93, and it has some really laughably bad things. It really, really is something that needed MST3K treatment. I think Riff Tracks did eventually do something on it. The thing is, somebody recently pointed out, while it's laughably bad, it's probably the truest Fantastic Four film to the spirit of the comics. Then you get the 2005 attempt starring Jessica Alba and Michael Chiklis and future Captain America Chris Evans.
I was going to say, he shows up everywhere, doesn't he?
And yeah, and it, there are obviously issues with those movies, but they were still at least fun. I mean, they weren't good films, let's be honest. I'm amazed a sequel got made at all, but the sequel definitely killed the franchise by making Galactus an amorphous cloud. But so now we have the current Fantastic Four.
The new reboot.
And so this production has one that has honestly has a troubled history. People have been questioning what's going on with it for a long time. It starts with Josh Trank gets hired as a director, and he pulls one of his actors from Chronicle to star as the Human Torch. But people are freaking out because Michael B. Jordan is black.
Much like how everyone hit the roof when Idris Elba showed up as
Heimdall.
In the Thor movies.
Now, again, I didn't have a problem with Michael B. Jordan being cast as Johnny Storm.
Why not?
My problem was they then cast Kate Mara as his sister.
Wait.
So they have to have a line in the movie where she's adopted to explain, because we can have a black Human Torch, but we cannot have a black Invisible Woman, especially if there's supposed to be a romance with Mr. Fantastic, is how I see it. But anyway, so that's the first bone of contention, but that's minor. I mean, really, that is not something that kills a movie.
That's the racist idiots being the racist idiots.
Although the reports that Dr. Doom, there were reports that, oh, Dr. Doom's a blogger. What? Yeah, I don't know. But as the movie's made and stuff starts coming out about it, one thing people note is the footage doesn't look good. And then the trailers start coming out, and it's again that, I saw that trailer. It was absolutely a trailer. The real sign of problems happened a couple weeks ago when Fox allowed reviewers to see the movie and embargoed the reviews.
That is a huge red warning sign right there. Anytime they're like, no reviews prior to the movie being released, yeah, no.
And here's where I honestly believe between the shenanigans that happened with the leaked Deadpool footage and the release of the Fantastic Four movie that Fox executives do not understand what the internet is. Because the movie released last week in England.
Okay.
And I don't know. First off, you're not going to be able to embargo the reviewers in the UK from reviewing the movie that's just been released. I don't know if they tried, but the other thing you can't embargo are the people who sat in a theater, watched the movie, then went on the internet and went, well, this was just awful. particularly there's a reviewer who, goes by Film Brain, and he is an online reviewer. He, does a couple series. One is called Projector, where he does reviews of movies that released in England before they released in America, and he saw Fantastic Four, and he immediately tweeted to the movie about everything he saw that was wrong with the movie. And IO9 picked up his comments and put them up. So, because it's like, well, the review may be embargoed, but Film Brain's commentary is not. So let's use that. Yeah, it was starting to get bad word of mouth prior to the release. And right now on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, no.
Fantastic Four has a 9%.
How is that? How does that rank compared to Pixels?
Pixels has an 18%.
How?
I don't know. Yeah, but that's the Fantastic Four. The movie that it equals for bad reviewing is the Halle Berry Catwoman.
Okay.
And it made, I think, 26 million. It's a flop. Right. I mean, it's a financial flop. It's a critical flop. It's a flop. Now, when Sony had a flop with The Amazing Spider-Man 2, which I believe got a 33% on Rotten Tomatoes, they decided now's the time to make a deal with Marvel and bring Spider-Man into the MCU. And so, yeah, there's this question of, all right, is Fox going to finally bite the bullet and go back and say, okay, Marvel, can we strike a deal so you can have the Fantastic Four? Because here's the thing. If I'm Marvel Studios, I want the Fantastic Four franchise back.
Of course.
I don't want it necessarily for the Fantastic Four. You want the Fantastic Four franchise back because then you get Doctor Doom and Galactus.
Because that ties into
Galactus, you suddenly have for the cosmic Marvel portion that the Guardians of the Galaxy have kicked off, and Doctor Doom, you maybe finally have that great central villain that the MCU so desperately needs besides Loki.
But I enjoy watching Loki get the crap kicked out
of him. It's great, but they need that villain that can really go toe-to-toe with the heroes, and that villain is Doctor Doom. And the problem is they don't, since Doom is directly tied to the Fantastic Four, they need to get him back if they want to do that. So that's what, if you're Marvel, you're going to push for it now. And Fox has to sit there going, well, this, we have made three different movies, four, actually, because Fox was involved in the Corman as well. We've made four Fantastic Four movies and they're all awful.
Yep.
Maybe it's time to just throw in the towel.
Yeah, sadly, Fox doesn't know when they're beat, but
yeah.
I do have to toss in one thing. Thinking about when you mentioned with the Deadpool trailer.
Yeah.
Have you sat down and watched the San Diego Comic-Con version versus what they released?
Yeah.
And the difference between those two?
There's small differences, but
the Stan Lee cameo. That's what they threw in there. That's the big difference that I saw.
Yeah, they didn't show the Stan Lee cameo in the release trailer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the other thing they didn't show that I noticed was the introduction of the teen sidekick.
True.
Which is great because the teen sidekick in Deadpool is Negasonic Teenage Warhead, which is named after I believe a punk song, which is great because in the comic, but this is a character from the comics. And when Kitty Pryde of the X-Men met her in the comics, her first reaction was, well, I guess all the code names are taken, aren't they? So they've got that. Yeah. Deadpool. And here's the thing. Deadpool, again, this is Fox. But Deadpool is a case where Fox got strong-armed into making the movie because they released that test footage and it went nuts on the internet and they went, all right, go for it. And now you've got the Deadpool trailer released and Deadpool is highly anticipated.
Oh, yes.
They're getting tons of buzz. In fact, one of the trailers for the Fantastic Four that showed up online had a little tag with Deadpool at the end saying, which is perfect Deadpool, break in on somebody else's thing. Now, hey guys, by the way, go check out my trailer here. And for erections lasting more than 4 hours, pat yourself on the back. and Deadpool is technically part of the X-Men franchise. Because he premiered as an X-Men villain.
Right.
He was actually one of Rob Liefeld's creations.
Well, and he made that moment in the Wolverine prequels.
Well, again, that's because they own him and his origins are tied directly into Wolverine. So that all works perfectly. The thing is, as a comic book fan, that trailer, that's like, well, no, that's actually Deadpool. I mean, the whole tone from the comic is there. Everything you expect from that character is there. Not everything is dire for Fox, I guess is the point. Marvel has a chance of getting Fantastic Four back because Fox just can't figure out what to do with them. But I'm pretty sure Fox is going to hold on to X-Men because that's doing okay for them. And even, there's the critiques of X-Men Apocalypse are a mixed bag. It's getting both good and bad. There's not enough to know which is going to win out yet. So we'll wait and see. I, for one, really enjoyed Days of Future Past.
Oh, yeah. Me too.
So I think that they're doing fine. And plus, they have a newly minted superstar with Nicholas Holt.
Oh, my, yes.
So between that and Jennifer Lawrence, although she said this is going to be her last X-Men movie.
Go figure.
She's got a career. I mean, she
has a whole nother franchise.
Yeah, but she's also, American Hustle. She's doing fine. So that's I think where we stand with the status of the movies. Now, I think it's going to be a couple of weeks before we know the full fallout of Fantastic Four. We'll probably be talking about it next episode. Mm-hmm. Right now, clear flop, and we'll see where it goes from there.
Speaking of clear flops, even though it seems to be doing double the positive reviews that that Fantastic Four did, can I just say for a moment about Pixels?
Sure.
Because, Pixels, I remember sitting in the theater and I saw the preview come up and it looked great and it looked like a fun premise. And then Adam Sandler showed up and I'm like, well, damn. There goes that one.
Well, so Pixels is a flop as well. It's a clear flop. And a lot of people are hoping this is the one that breaks the back of the Adam Sandler movies.
Your lips to God's ears, I swear.
Well, it's because it's the problem with Adam Sandler movies is they make money. Doesn't matter how awful they are. In fact, Adam Sandler's second movie of some parenting series, like Father, I don't remember what it was. All I know was a sequel to an Adam Sandler movie came out the same weekend as Pacific Rim, and it beat Pacific Rim. And I immediately went online and said, this is why we can't have nice things.
Oh, yes.
And so you had Pixels coming out. Thank goodness Pixels got beat by the second week of Ant-Man.
There is that. I just have to say, I actually went out and found it's about a 3-minute short.
Oh, yeah, I've seen it.
That Pixels is based off of. Save yourself $12, folks. Find this on the web. It's great. It's a fun little 3 minutes of your day, and it's everything you want out of Pixels without the Adam Sandler.
Yeah. I don't know if I'd mentioned this before or not. I might have on a previous episode where we were complaining about Adam Sandler, but the problem with Adam Sandler is he gets his hands on what are counted as really good scripts and then reworks them to fit his style, and they become awful. What I've heard is the original script that eventually became I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry was a fantastic script and was really people were looking forward to it. But Sandler got the rights and that's what happened. And I've heard and it's not that everything he's done is awful.
No, you can say that.
No, Wedding Singer was okay. I actually enjoyed Waterboy.
Okay.
And Happy Madison has just one of the greatest clips ever that gets reused and reused where the game show host guys, that is the stupidest thing I have ever heard in my life. And ends with, may God have mercy on your soul. That gets reused a lot for descriptions of stupid. Unfortunately, it usually can then be directed to just about any other Adam Sandler movie.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's, I'm hoping this will tell Hollywood, you know what? There are actual good. I'll say one other thing that is good. I have enjoyed of Adam Sandler. I liked Hotel Transylvania, but that's because the creator of Dexter's Laboratory and one of the directors and writers from the Powerpuff Girls, Grindy Tarnowski, directed it, and it was based on a Robert Smigel script.
Yeah. And I get the feeling that it wasn't a Happy Madison / Adam Sandler movie. It was its own thing and just happened to star him as opposed to.
Well, I think he was a producer, but I think it was his voice got overpowered by Tarnowski's voice, much to our joy.
Yes.
So yeah, so that's where we stand this week. So with that, it looks like we're hitting about that time again.
Indeed.
So if you want to drop us a line, just go to www.fanboynewsnetwork.com and leave us a note in the comment section. Until then, I'm Jeff Harris.
And I'm Dan Christensen.
And you take care till we talk to you again.
Nanu, nanu.
This program is produced by Jeff Harris and Fanboy News Network and is copyright 2015 to Jeff Harris and Fanboy News Network. All rights are reserved, including rights to copy and redistribute this program. All music in this podcast comes from the Footage Firm and is used under a royalty-free license.